Welcome to Partnering with Parents, brought to you by the Classical Academies. Join us every other Tuesday as we educate, encourage, and support parents in their role as the primary educator.
Well, I'm Cameron Curry, the CEO for the Classical Academies, and it's exciting to have another community conversation. And today's guest is Rocky Heron. And Rocky's going to be talking to us about how drug abuse impacts our children, our homes, our schools, and our communities. So, Rocky, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Cameron. Nice to be here.
Well, give us a little snapshot of who you are and how you ended up with this topic today.
Well, I am originally from San Diego, and at 23 years old, I was hired by the DEA as a special agent. And I spent from 1990 to 2021 working for the DEA investigating drug crimes here in California, Mexico, and Central and South America.
Wow. Okay.
And when you investigate drug crimes, you get to see up close what drug abuse does to individuals and communities and schools and in our country and the broader world.
Mm-hmm.
And I never had any intent to be involved in education, but in 2007, I discovered that my own daughters in school in San Diego were not getting any drug prevention education. So I put together a simple presentation of things I thought I'd want them and their friends to know. And by word of mouth, it spread. And by the time I retired from DEA last year, I'd given over 600 presentations in 15 countries. And then I was blessed to be hired almost immediately by the San Diego County Office of Education as their alcohol and other drug ambassador. So for the last 6 months, I've been working locally in San Diego, delivering prevention assemblies to schools, communities, church groups, anybody who will listen,
mm-hmm.
because I'm desperate to get more help in trying to solve this problem.
Right, exactly. And I think there are so many families who have not been touched by this, but I think there's so many more families who are dealing with addiction, who are dealing with a struggling teen, parent, you know, extended family member. So what do you see happening in our communities and country right now?
Well, I believe that much of our drug abuse problem is a symptom of a deeper mental and emotional health crisis.
Mm-hmm.
I'm calling it a crisis of despair that's driving so much of the drug abuse. Obviously, we need to work much, much harder to solve those mental and emotional health problems. But in the immediate term, my mission is to try to warn our children and our families about the deadly drugs that have flooded our country. So what I see is that our country is experiencing an unprecedented level of mental and emotional health problems in our children, simultaneous with a massive flooding of our country of extraordinarily powerful and deadly drugs. And that's what's driving our drug abuse and overdose crisis right now.
And tell us, Rocky, too, you know, that we're all aware as Californians that cannabis is legal in our state. And there's a lot of talk about this, a gateway drug. Is that true?
I don't like using the term gateway drug because I've seen plenty of people ruin their lives just on marijuana.
Okay.
Marijuana won't kill you. And you know, honestly, if all the kids who are using meth and coke and fentanyl pills would switch to marijuana, that'd be a win for us because we'd have time to work with those kids. It's interesting. I'll go to a school and the school will say, well, our biggest drug problem is marijuana. Well, from their perspective, that's what they're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
My argument is, no, your biggest problem is you have a population of kids willing to take these fentanyl pills that will kill them. So, you know, the perception of the drug problem is very different depending on your optic and what you're dealing with. But, you know, it's a complicated argument when we talk about legalization.
Right.
The one part of it that I claim is that it has reduced the perception of risk of cannabis in our kids. And the kids tell me this because they go, Rocky, it's legal. So that instantly removed any or many of the concerns they might have had about cannabis use.
Right.
When at the same time, medical science is proving now that teenagers actually damage themselves when they use marijuana. And so that's the risk, right? We legalized it to solve apparently some problems, but now we have a much greater willingness of our youth to believe that it's herbal and not harmful.
And it's okay. Exactly. So
right. and the potency of marijuana today is one thing many adults don't understand. I mean, when I was offered marijuana back in the day, it was 4 to 5% because that THC, that's what the natural plant contained. But the plant's been heavily modified. So the plant today, a joint today in California, contains 25 to 30% THC.
Incredible.
Meaning it's as strong as 5 or 6 joints used to be. And then the concentrates, the extracts that the kids are smoking in the vapes that could be 80 or 90% potent.
Incredible. Wow. That's just incredible. So really, this does connect with why really parents aren't really aware of the severity of the problem. So why are we not more outraged at the impact that it's having on young people?
Well, it's a super complicated question, but I just discovered a survey or results of a survey that the CDC put out last week, and they interviewed thousands of high school students last year, and 44% of the teens responded that they felt persistently sad or hopeless. 37% of high school students said their mental health was poor. 20% of teens admitted to contemplating suicide, 25% of females. And then 55% of the teens said they experienced emotional abuse at home in 2021. Well, if that's the state of affairs for our children, what's the mental state of affairs for our adults? So I think we have a terrible dilemma because our adults are as fatigued and worn out and emotionally drained as our teens. And I believe more than ever, essentially neglecting to tend to the teens. And I don't understand the death numbers. I'm not a big fan of statistics because they can be so manipulated, but the death numbers, can't be really twisted too hard. You know, when I started in DEA Cameron in 1990, we were losing 10,000 Americans a year dying from drug overdose. That seemed like a big number, still seems like a big number to me. In 2007, when I discovered my kids weren't really getting any education in the schools, the death total had climbed to 37,000. And that shocked me. I didn't realize. And I naively, I'm a very patriotic guy. I naively believed that our country would react. I would say, no, we won't accept this. And every year since 2007, I would declare in my presentations, as I watched the death total increase 5,000-6,000 a year, I would say, how bad does it have to get? Does it have to reach 100,000 a year before we start to care? And then sadly, in November of last year, the stats came out that we had lost, in fact, 100,000 men, women, and children to drug overdose in 12 months. And it got 2 days of headlines and nothing.
And nothing.
And
wow.
Nothing. And the people I'm talking to say it's probably going to be 110,000 this year.
So what has kept you really focused in on this work? I think there's a lot of people who will be listening to this going, this almost sounds hopeless. I mean, what kept you in the game? What kept you excited is probably the wrong word, but really engaged in the work of this, of sharing this information?
Well, I'm here accidentally. I never intended this presentation to go anywhere beyond my own daughters. And by word of mouth, it spread and spread. And I've come to talk to, I've talked to about 140,000 young people now in these 15 countries. And many, many of them have come up crying and hugged me and thanked me for sharing this information. They told me I changed their perception. And after experiencing so much misery and seeing so much misery from drug abuse, suffering, and overdose death, and seeing the parents who've lost their children, and the belief that these kids, some of them anyway, listen to me and that I might actually be changing some of their behaviors is enough to keep me motivated. And, you know, the many critics of mine say that assembly-based education is useless, that I'm not going to change anybody's minds. Obviously, I don't agree with that. The schools that use me don't agree with that. But I to my critics, I respond that if I've managed to change the behavior of one out of every 1,000 students I address, if one of 1,000 changes their behavior because of something I shared and spares themselves and their families from the suffering that I've witnessed, that's a win that I will declare. And that's as long as kids listen to me, Cameron, I'll keep talking. The moment the kids stop listening to me, then I'm done.
Exactly.
But right now they're listening.
Well, you were talking about that national survey you came across. In your work regionally, are you seeing that that actually aligns with what you're seeing here in the San Diego community?
Absolutely. I don't have the overdose numbers for San Diego County from last year. I did speak to the medical examiner who said that his office was literally swamped with cases. They don't have the staff to rapidly process all the overdose deaths they have to investigate. But I do know that in the prior year, we had reached almost 1,000 overdose deaths in the county. And the year before that, 2019, it was 600 and some. So, you know, I think we're going to be well over 1,000 this year for a county that traditionally was experiencing maybe 300 a year.
Right.
So yes, I do see very much the same problems here. And our geographical location next to Mexico makes us the national conduit for fentanyl and methamphetamine. And so masses of the drug pass through San Diego to go on to other parts of the country, but a lot of it stays here and it's very, very inexpensive here. And I think that's a particular challenge we have in San Diego. We're flooded with stuff and the prices just continue to plummet while the purity and potency increases.
And what are you, we've already kind of talked about the root causes. I'm wondering also, is there a particular age you're seeing kind of on an average that the teens are accessing this, or maybe it's even less than that? Maybe it's in middle school that it's happening.
Well, it's interesting. It depends, of course, on the community, on the school, on the idiosyncratic conditions of that school. But I do get to work with the kids in juvenile hall in San Diego, kids who've been locked up for violent crimes, and they don't want to listen. When I show up to talk, they don't want to hear me. But I ignore their hatred, and I give my presentation. And at the end, we're in a different place. They're talking to me quite openly because, you know, they realize I understand the misery and suffering that they've lived. Mm-hmm. And I ask them questions, and I say, what age did you guys start using drugs? And they tell me every time, 8, 9, 10. 8, 9, 10 years old, somebody's putting a drug in their face. Some older person hands these little kids a drug. And I'm not so worried about addiction at that age, but what I do believe happens is these little kids begin to learn that they fit in with older people if they use drugs. So we're conditioning very young kids to use. My own daughter was, I have three, my youngest was 11 in sixth grade in El Cajon, and her best friend was stealing marijuana from an older brother. And for over a year, my daughter was getting stoned on marijuana every weekend. And I had no idea. Mm-hmm. I learned this when she was 17. And I've tried hard as anybody I know to keep my kids away from it. So, you know, I do think a lot of the use starts young, 11, 12. Obviously, the harder use, you know, will increase over the years. But we've had some national headlines in just in the last few weeks of children 11, 12, and 13 dying from fentanyl overdoses. And there's a story in Connecticut from a month ago, a 13-year-old overdosed on his middle school campus from fentanyl. And in the follow-up investigation, they discovered he'd brought 40 baggies of it to school, ostensibly to distribute to his classmates.
Wow.
Parents are so out of touch with the actual drug reality of the drug threat to their kids. Most school administrators, in my opinion, are wildly out of touch with the actual drug threat to the kids. We have deadly, literally deadly drugs on our middle and high school campuses at the parties surrounding our kids. Mm-hmm. And yet we have not made any kind of national significant shift towards educating our kids about that threat.
What are some of the key takeaways that moms and dads can be thinking about right now? They've got some middle schoolers, they've got some high schoolers. What should they be, first of all, looking for? What are conversations they should be having? What are some of the warning signs maybe they should be looking for?
Yeah, well, the first message I have to parents is no family is safe from this. No, this is the social problem that cuts across every single demographic, geographic, racial boundary. There is no socioeconomic protection from this. And unfortunately, too many of our families do believe that by moving to a certain area or putting their kids in a certain kind of school, that somehow they're immune from this. And I have the fortune and misfortune to meet beautiful, loving parents who are much better parents than I ever was, who are grieving their dead kids
right.
from this fentanyl crisis. And unfortunately, I think too many parents are naive and somehow believe their kids are safe or their kids are too smart. And what parents don't realize, this is an insider threat. This is not some bad kid who's going to walk up and just randomly force your kid to use drugs. This is going to be their best friend, their boyfriend, their girlfriend, someone they admire who hands them this drug, looks them in the eye and says, trust me, this is good and safe. Let's have some fun. And our children are not prepared to understand, in my opinion, they're not being prepared by the schools, by our families, by our society to understand that that choice could literally be lethal.
Right.
And if it's not lethal, it could destroy the quality of their life.
So if my son or daughter, Rocky, is on fentanyl right now, are there signs I'm going to see around the dinner table? Are there behaviors? Is there something that's going to connect that for me to ask some questions?
Yes, I do believe. And every individual is different. And of course, the dose that they take, the frequency that they take will all change, you know, the manifestations of it physically.
Right.
But I don't believe that someone turns from a productive, outgoing, positive young person into a hardcore drug user without significant changes in motivation, sleep patterns, social engagement. And I do think that parents can notice. Mm-hmm. One of the issues I've dealt with over the years is a tragic one, that a lot of parents who smoked marijuana when they were young believe it's just a normal part, a rite of passage, and they permit their kids to smoke marijuana at home, like my daughter's friend's family.
Right.
And unfortunately, what I've learned from parents who've lost their kids, those parents become accustomed to seeing their kids under the influence, and they assume it's just marijuana, but they don't notice the shift when that kid either starts consuming much more potent marijuana or shifts to the drugs that end up killing them. The parents were unaware of it because they were used to seeing the kid under the influence. And fentanyl, just so you understand, fentanyl is essentially the same as heroin in its impact on the body. The high from fentanyl, in my understanding, is similar to heroin. The problem is the potency of fentanyl is 50 times greater than heroin.
Wow.
So for any parent listening, think about that. When we were young, we all heard about heroin. We all knew it was the end of the road drug. We all knew that just from the movies and the culture.
Right.
And we did not have middle schoolers and high schoolers using it across the country. Today, you know, it's a long conversation about the OxyContin epidemic, but as a result of the OxyContin epidemic, our culture has shifted. And now we have kids in middle and high school using a heroin that's 50 times stronger than any heroin that ever existed. And so it's we have to shift up. And so what I also tell parents is, if you have any suspicion that your children are down this road, turn towards it. Don't put the blinders on.
Right.
This is a serious, serious problem, and it needs professional help. And I think the first line of defense are the school counselors. Our schools are woefully understaffed with counselors, but they're good people, and they want to help, and they can access resources. So I tell parents, it's no harder than contacting your school and saying, look, I'm concerned my student might have a drug problem. Let me talk to a counselor so I can get some guidance.
Yes.
And those counselors will connect the parents with community resources and professionals who can take an assessment, can address the problem head on. And again, I've met so many parents who didn't do that and now regret it and will regret it for the rest of their lives because their children ended up taking, you know, a fatal dose.
Mm-hmm. They saw some of the warning signs and thought, no, I'm not going to trust my instinct here. I'm going to, you're right, turn the other way. Oh, it's going to be okay. This is just a phase. And I will tell you, I've met with those families who say, you know, Cameron, they're going to drink anyway, so we might as well have them drink at the house. Mr. Curry, you know what? The kids are going to experiment with smoking marijuana, so I'm just going to have them do it at the house. And I just come away from those conversations going, Mom and Dad, wake up. That's not okay. They're not just going to drink anyway, and they're not going to smoke anyway. I mean, we can't provide drugs and alcohol to our children at home. That's lunacy.
Well, it's just a continuation of the normalization of substance abuse. And there's a story I tell that for me, it illustrates sort of the change in our culture. I was working in Bolivia for DEA from 1998 to 2004. I lived there with my family, and my little girls were not exposed to much U.S. television. And at the late 90s, we changed the rules on advertising, and we allowed the pharmaceutical industry to really up their game on the commercials on TV. And I didn't know this because I wasn't here.
Right.
But when we came back in 2004, we've been home for about 2 or 3 months, and my little girls were 9, 7, and 5. And they came to me and said, Dad, what's erectile dysfunction? And I kind of choked and I looked at them. Well, I tried to talk through it. And I said, why are you asking me that? Well, we see all these commercials on TV. We don't know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I started watching and I was horrified. There are times of the day when every single commercial on TV is telling our kids that there's a chemical that's going to perfect their life. And we allow that legally, and we encourage it because it's a huge industry, right? But our kids have been conditioned by our society to believe since infancy that there are chemicals that will solve their problems. Our popular culture is telling them that marijuana is not even a drug. It's an herb that's going to make them superior human beings. And I don't blame our kids for listening to the message we give them.
Sure.
And that's why I have such a passion, such desperation for this. And it's a challenge for me because I see a giant forest fire roaring through our society. And yet so many of the people I talk to in education and in governments, they see smoke. They don't see the fire that I see. And I don't get it. I mean, how bad does the problem have to get, Cameron, before we actually go, wait a second, we're doing something wrong here. We need to try. And I think there's a stigma against prevention education. I'm not saying that DARE is good or bad.
Right.
But DARE was discredited by some social scientists and suffered severe setbacks and was driven out of most of our schools. And I discovered it wasn't replaced by anything. And that's incomprehensible to me. Facing all this death and suffering, and for everyone who dies, there's dozens more who suffers on in the slavery of drug addiction, right?
Absolutely.
Everyone who suffers on an addiction, there's an entire circle of family, friends, schools severely impacted by that. So when we talk about each death, 100,000, there's actually millions of people daily suffering because of someone's choice to use drugs. And we are not shifting as a society. There are no new conversations about what can we do differently. And in that vacuum and in that gap, I'm not alone. I'm not the only one doing this, but we're a small cadre of people out there saying we won't accept this and we're going to try. So earlier you asked me, you know, it does seem kind of hopeless. And there's a silly parable that I heard, you know, the little girl and her dad go to the beach one day after a storm, and the beach is covered with starfish that have been washed up from the storm.
Mm-hmm.
And the little girl runs to the shore and she starts throwing individual starfish back into the water. And her dad comes up and says, "Sweetheart, what are you doing?" She goes, "I'm saving the starfish." And he looks and he goes, "There's thousands. You can't save them all." And she goes, "Well, I just saved this one." And she throws it back in the water.
Right.
So that is actually, as silly as that might sound, that is actually my prime motive. I will never know how many kids I impact positively. I take it on faith that I'm impacting some, and that's enough for me to keep trying. But it has to happen at home. Our parents have to realize this conversation has to start at home and young. And many parents ask me, "Well, how old is appropriate?" I say, at birth. I mean, when your kids are toddlers and see someone smoking cigarettes, point that out and say, "Ooh, icky. Why would they put that sticky stuff in their bodies?" Right?
Mm-hmm.
And then when you see references to marijuana, address it head on. Say, "Oh, marijuana is stupid for kids. It damages kids' brains when they grow. I hope you never use marijuana." And that's something I like to touch on very briefly as well. A lot of parents don't think about this. You know, as you know, what better than I do, the child brain develops from about 12 to 25, right? And that's why in middle and high school, our kids are given more independence and harder material because their brains are more capable of handling it. And alcohol and drugs are chemicals we put in our bodies to change how the brain functions. That's what getting high or drunk or stoned is. And what medical science is discovering now in great lengths, when teenagers use drugs and alcohol to change how their brains function, they're actually damaging the growth.
Right.
It is obvious and so logical, but parents don't think about this. And the kids don't think about it. And it's one of the main arguments I use in my lectures to the kids. If you want to use this stuff, that's a choice you're going to make. But please wait until your brains are done growing so you don't damage the brain that you have to spend the rest of your life with. And it's such an obvious, basic message. And the kids tell me they've never heard it expressed like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Rocky, too, there are so many families. And I would think, especially in the last 2 years coming through this pandemic and staying at home and loss of job and income and everything else that came with that, there are moms and dads that are self-medicating, that are addicted at this point. And, you know, let alone what's going on with their children, but they're modeling bad behavior right around the dinner table.
Oh, no, you're absolutely correct. And the kids go to a shopping center and there's a smoke shop and a marijuana, you know, shop and a liquor store,
mm-hmm.
you know, all next to each other. And everything they look at in the movies and the social media and the television and all the shows completely normalize consumption. And every ad on TV, every other ad on TV is for some chemical that's going to improve their lives.
Right, right.
This is really, really an unfortunate thing that we've done to our kids. And I don't understand how prevention education isn't something schools scream to get. And yet, after 15 years of doing it successfully, I argue, in San Diego and all over the world, it is still a struggle for me to get in schools. And my new position with the County Office of Education has helped some. And obviously, right now with COVID, and there's some challenges there.
Right.
But I think a deeper challenge is getting school administrators to realize that school is the only place that we're going to get this message across to the kids. It has to happen in the schools. This is my belief. It has mm-hmm. to happen in the schools. And some very prominent high school districts in San Diego have had me do parent events in the evenings. And I do them in Spanish and English because I really want to reach parents. One district has probably 20,000 parents or guardians. Two parents Zoom, connected to the Zoom meeting.
Incredible.
I went to another district that had recently lost a student. A 17-year-old died in this high school, in the high school district. And the district did big advertising, a big event, and probably 5,000 parents, and one came to the event. And, I still show up and I still try to do them, but it's, you know, it just furthers my belief that I have to do this in the schools to get the kids as hostage audiences.
Absolutely.
Even the ones that don't want to hear my message, they have to hear it because they're stuck there and they can't unhear it, right? And one of the messages I give the kids, and this is one of my motivations as well. I was involved in San Diego in DEA investigating the early OxyContin crisis here in San Diego, which we discovered roughly 2007, 2008. It had been here for a while, but we weren't aware of it. But beginning in 2008, 2009, 2010, I was heavily involved in arresting people selling Oxy. And many of the people selling it are addicted on it. And we'd arrest them, they'd be in handcuffs, these young 19, 20, 21-year-old kids sobbing. And they would all say, "If only someone would have warned me. If only I'd known how bad it was when I was 15 or 16, I wouldn't have started." And of course, I take that with a grain of salt. But I said, you know what? Okay. I accept that challenge. I'm going to be that guy. So I tell all the kids in my audiences at the end, I said, there's one thing for sure that's happened. You now all know. And for the rest of your lives, you cannot tell yourselves or anybody else that you did not understand the consequence of using this stuff. And if something bad happens to you or someone you care about, you're going to have to come to terms with that because you knew better, you know. And the kids mm-hmm. clap and they cheer and they get it. I mean, I'm speaking to them, not at them.
Right.
And I'm meeting them where they are. And, you know, there are a lot of drug prevention programs out there that are much less direct than mine. And many of the students come up and tell me that they are grateful that a lot of the programs that they get, if they get anything, are so light and so removed from the actual real world consequences of drug destruction that they don't resonate with the kids. You know, I talk about addicted babies. I talk about overdose death. I talk about crime and poverty and broken homes and child abuse and all these things that come from drug abuse. And the kids appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, Rocky, there's always hope. You and I both know that. There is always hope. And so is there a tool, a resource, a website that we want to leave with families at this point so at least they can start their own research or at least start looking into this for the warning signs? So at least they can start these conversations around their dinner table.
Yeah, well, the County Office of Education has a website, sdcoe.net, that has links to resources that we've compiled at the County Office of Education. But honestly, the internet is full of free resources. YouTube is full of educational videos. There are, I have no idea how many new family foundations that have been set up by parents who are grieving because they've lost their kids and are desperate to educate and inform the public. So it's not complicated for a parent to Google drug abuse prevention resources.
Okay, perfect.
You will find endless free resources. And of course, my message to the parents is don't do this in isolation. Sit down with your kids, find some videos that make sense to you and sit and watch them with your kids and discuss them. Make yourself a safe place for this. And a lot of parents tell me they've been afraid or unwilling to have this conversation with their kids. I don't understand that. I respect it, but I don't understand it. But, you know, do what you have to do to get your kids to believe they can talk to you about it.
Yes.
Ask your kids what's going on in your environment. I did a thing with my young daughters when they began to party as teenagers. And I said, look, if you're ever in a situation that gets ugly or you want to get out, just text me 911 24/7. I will come get you. No questions asked.
Yep. Exactly.
And my daughters tested me a couple of times. There were several times when I was at 2 a.m. was picking them up from somewhere. And I desperately wanted to ask questions that I didn't. You know, more important to me was to make sure my daughters knew that I was there to support them regardless. And again, I think unfortunately too many parents have offshored this, believing the schools are doing it. The schools are inundated with all their daily requirements. They're not doing it. And our poor kids are living in a world that's offering them deadly choices and they don't even understand.
Well, Rocky, we're going to end now and just thank you so much for this time together. I know that we've started a great conversation here. We are hopeful that moms and dads are going to take this from the vantage point of which it was given with great seriousness, with the opportunity to really press into their kids and have deeper conversations and to find resources and information that will make all the difference. So, Rocky, thank you so much for your time today.
No, thank you for the talk, Cameron. Good luck.
Partnering with Parents is brought to you by the Classical Academies, a group of award-winning public charter schools serving over 4,500 students in Southern California. Suggest a future episode or advertise with us by visiting classicalacademy.com/podcast. Consider subscribing to our channel, leaving us a review, and supporting our Patreon page. Thanks for listening.